two chapters, or chapter 30 and 31, but we're going to back up a little bit to chapter 29, because 29 flows right into chapter 30, and 30 flows right into chapter 31, and 31 flows right into 2 Samuel. And I got to figuring, how far do we need to go in 2 Samuel in order to tie things all together? We're not going to read them, but we're going to kind of summarize when we get there. But we would need to go about 5 chapters. But we're going to kind of cover that in summary form. What you notice is that the Philistines were going to go to battle against the Israelites. And so they gathered all of their forces at Aphek. And this group coming up from Ziklag made the journey right on up to here is David and his 600 men. And we're going to find out when they leave that it'll take them 3 days to get back to Ziklag. So that's about a 3-day journey. But when the king, or the city king, and it's interesting in this chapter, he has rulers. And evidently, they don't have to listen to them, or he doesn't, or they don't have to listen to him. And he pays attention to them. And David and his men have come up from Ziklag. They've met the rest of the Philistine army at Aphek, and they are falling in behind them, and they are ready to march with them all the way up to Jezreel, where they're going to engage the Israelites in battle. And as they're going, the rest of the Philistines turn to the king and say, what about those Hebrews? And the king says, David has been with me for over a year, and I have not found anything wrong with him. And he will not create any problems nor any harm, and I trust him explicitly. And the rulers turn to the king and say, have you completely lost your mind? They didn't really say that. They say, don't you remember? This is the man that they sing songs about in Israel. And don't you know that when we get together for the battle against the Israelites, what better way would David have of getting himself back into the good graces of his king than fighting against us? He will not go with us. So the king of the Philistines calls David up and says, I'm sorry, you've never done anything to cause me to distrust you, and I firmly believe that you will be a great asset in this battle, but the rulers don't want you to go. So therefore, you and your men need to go back to Ziklag. And David says, why? Whatever have I done wrong? And he says, doesn't matter. They don't want you, so you can't go. So you go back to Ziklag. So the Philistines make their way. Matter of fact, the army of Israel is already at Jezreel. There's a spring there. You can see the valley of Jezreel, and evidently there's a spring in that area, and the Israelites are already there. And the Philistines are now going to Jezreel in order to encounter the Israelites and have the battle. But David and his men turn around, and they head back to Ziklag. And we leave the Philistine army for the rest of the chapter, and we'll come back to them in the last chapter. But for the rest of this chapter, David and his men, or the end of the chapter, David and his men get up early the next morning. He wants them to leave at sunup, if not earlier. And so they get up early the next morning and they go back, and it takes them 3 days to get down to Ziklag. And when they get down to Ziklag, the city is burned. When they get back home, the whole town, the whole village has been burned. And all of the men begin to cry and begin to weep because all of their families are gone. What had happened is that the Amalekites had come up from the south. We're going to change slides a little bit. And the Amalekites are all in this area. And here's Ziklag. Now up here is Aphek. And up here's Jezreel. You can see the whole thing. But they've come back down to Ziklag, and the Amalekites, the people that Saul was supposed to destroy, have come up, and they have invaded the Negev, which is that whole southern part. The Negev is really this whole area down in here. I think I'm going too high. It's this whole area down in here. And they've come up, and they've invaded, and they've come to Ziklag, and they've burned it. They've not only gone into Ziklag, but they've also gone into some of the cities that belonged to the Philistines, since the Philistine army had gone north, and nobody was there to defend it. And so all the men of David, because all their families are gone, and all their possessions that were left behind have been burned up, and the city has been burned, they become angry. I couldn't help but think about what's going on in our country in connection with the shooting in Florida. There's a lot of anger. And because there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of things people are wanting done that had really nothing to do with what happened in Florida. And so the men of David, all 600 of them, not necessarily all of them, but enough of them, began to talk about stoning David. David's two wives and his family are part of those that are missing. David's stuff is part of what has been burned. David was in the same place the other 600 men were when all of this took place. He had nothing to do with it. But in their anger and in their emotional response, they want to hurt somebody and they want to blame somebody. And so they blame David. And they're all wanting to stone him. I want you to look at what's said. This is in verse 8. David was greatly distressed. The Bible has a way of speaking the things in such a, well, what's the way word I'm trying to find? It's not exaggerated in this case, but it's, where you speak and you kind of understate exactly what's being said. And it does that here. David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in spirit because of his sons and his daughters. But David found strength in the Lord his God. How does he do that? Well, the very next thing that happens is he tells the priest, Ahimelech, bring me the ephod. And he asks God, should I go after these people? So he inquires of God through the ephod, because he has a priest with him, as to whether or not he should go after the Amalekites and pursue them, and would he be able to destroy them? And to both of those questions, God answers him, yes, you go after them, and yes, you will be victorious over them. But that's not all that he does. How would you think he comforts himself and finds strength in God? Now, I know y'all don't want to talk much because it's Wednesday night and you're tired. You're welcome to, but if you don't want to, I will. What about all the promises God made to him? You will be king. What about the way God had blessed him and God had been with him and protected him from Saul? All the things God had already done, the promises God had already made, plus his belief in God and his trust in God. We're not going to read all of these, but I want you to hold on to 1 Samuel. And I want you to open your Bible to Psalm 25. Somebody made the comment in one of the commentaries I was reading that they thought David wrote Psalm 25 at this event that was happening in 1 Samuel chapter 30. And when you read it, and you read it all the way through, you could say, yeah, that fits exactly. But so does Psalm 26. And so does Psalm 27. And the very last verse in Psalm 27 says, wait for the Lord, be strong and take heart, and wait for the Lord. And immediately, after hearing what the men are wanting to do, then David says to the priest, bring the ephod. And then he asks God, shall I go? And he waits on God's answer, and then he does what is said. But 25, 26, and 27 are three remarkable psalms. Now you read them with in mind David going through this distress that he's under when his own men are wanting to kill him. And then you read them with regard to your own distress and see how close you can come to the heart of David. We're not going to read them tonight, but I challenge you to read them. And with whatever difficulties and problems you may be going through and suffering, read those and look at the thoughts of David and realize this is not just a song. This is not just poetry. This is a man's true and genuine heart and thought of mind. And you begin to see the trust and the faith this man has in God. And you can begin to understand what verse 6 is talking about. David found strength in the Lord his God. He became stronger. In spite of his men, he didn't discipline the ones that wanted to stone him. He came to Ziklag with 600, and he leaves Ziklag with 600. Now, he's not going to make it to the battle of the Amalekites with 600. But he has 600 when he gets to Ziklag, and he's got 600 when he leaves to go to the battle. We'll find out why he is not going with all 600. If you look just south of Ziklag, there is a little place right here, this a branch of a creek or river. Evidently, it's flowing into the Mediterranean Sea. After they had found out that they were going to pursue the Amalekites and that they would be successful, verse 9 tells us that David and his 600 men left and they came to the Besor Valley. All right, this little stream is called Besor. And so they come to the valley of this stream. And when they come to that valley, 200 of the men are worn out. Well, they've taken a 3-day journey from Ziklag. They've come with all the emotional draining of coming to Ziklag and finding out family's gone and everything else is gone. They've been crying so hard they cannot cry anymore. They're emotionally drained. They're physically tired. And 200 of them, when they get to this valley, say, we can't cross that valley. So they leave those 200 there with the luggage. Some translations will say the baggage or the supplies. And so they leave what they are not going to need in the battle there. And they have 200 men that stay with it. And then now 400 go on to meet the Amalekites. And they go, and as they're going, they meet a young man who's an Egyptian. And the young man who's an Egyptian, they ask him who he is, what he's doing there, what's going on. And he said, I am an Egyptian. I was the servant of an Amalekite. And he tells them where all they had been. My master abandoned me. My master abandoned me when I became ill 3 days ago. And we raided the Negev of the Kerethites, some territory belonging to Judah and the Negev of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag. But I want you to notice something in that verse. I want you to look at verse 12. When they found this man, this Egyptian, they gave him a cake of figs and they gave him some cakes of raisins. He ate, he was revived because he had not eaten any food or drunk any water for 3 days and three nights. And then you drop down to where it says in verse 13, my master abandoned me when I became ill 3 days ago. There was a literal translation I was reading that starts off this. It literally said, my master abandoned me, and this is the third day. Do you see something in there? Jesus was in the grave 3 days and three nights. But if he died on Friday, he was raised on the third day. 3 days and three nights is an idiom, a figure of speech. And it means on the third day. That's the way it's used here. When you take a look at it literally. He had not eaten food for 3 days and three nights. This is the third day since my master abandoned me. And so it's an idiom there, on the third day. And that kind of helps us a little bit with the way they talked, the way they understood things. What we have a problem with in a lot of different areas is we tend to understand their Hebrew the way we would talk in our Southern English or the way we would talk in our English. And therefore, some of the things they say and some of the idioms they use don't make sense to us, but they made perfect sense to them. And that's one of those things that might help a little bit. There's still a lot of questions about that. We won't deal with them now. But anyway, after he had identified himself and he told what they had done, David asked him, can you take us to that party of people that did this to Ziklag? And he says, I will take you if you swear to me that you will not kill me and you will not give me back to my master. Evidently, they swore that to him because he led them down. And there they were, all those Amalekites, and they were scattered all over the countryside. And they were having a major party because of all of the plunder they had taken from all of those cities they had raided from the Philistines and from the Israelites and from the others. And they were having a major party. And so the Bible says they fought them from dusk until the evening of the next day. That mean they fight overnight? No, not necessarily. Dusk, it can be evening, or the word here for dusk can be morning. And if they started the fight at sunup, they started the fight early in the morning, and they went till the evening of the next day, when would the fight stop? Sundown. Because the Jewish day started at sundown, or that day ended at sundown and the next day started at sundown. So instead of it being that they fought all night, it could be that they started early that morning and the battle lasted until sundown. The sundown or the evening of the next day. And here's the results of that. They fought until that evening. Nobody escaped except 400 young men that jumped on camels and ran away. And then David recovered everything the Amalekites had taken, including his two wives. Verse 19 goes a little further. Nothing was missing, young or old, boy or girl, plunder or anything else they had taken. David brought everything back. He took all the flocks and herds, and his men drove them ahead of the other livestock, saying, this is David's plunder. There's a change of heart. No longer are they saying they want to destroy him. Why? Because the emotional distress has been eased. It is why you don't allow a victim's family to sit on a jury. It's why you don't allow a victim's family to be the judge in a case. That's why they ask jurors before they can sit on a jury if they're familiar with either the prosecution or the defendant. And if they're familiar with either one of them, they're not allowed to be on the jury. Because when emotion rules, you don't make good judgments. And you want people that are impartial, who will not be judging based on emotion. And that's the whole thing with what's going on here with David. His men emotionally are hurt and angry and want something done, and they want to lash out at somebody. So they decide they're going to stone David. Some of them do. But now that all of that's taken care of and they have everything back, David's the hero. And this is David's plunder. The emotions just go up and down and all over the place, which is why they cannot be what rules the day. They came to the 200 men who had stayed with the baggage. They were on the other side of the Besor Valley. When they came up to him, David said, "How you guys doing?" And before they could get to talking very much, I love the way this is stated in the NIV in verse 22. All the evil men and all the troublemakers said, they don't get any of the stuff we're bringing back, because they didn't go with us into the battle. They can have their wife and their children and they can leave, but they don't get a thing, because they did not go with us to the battle. Why would he call those guys, or why would the Bible, God, the Holy Spirit, call those guys evil troublemakers? Huh? Self-centered, that's right. They weren't thinking. Because they're self-centered, and again, there's anger. You can almost hear them grumbling. Those guys stayed back there. They're not any tireder than I am. I've taken the same journey they've taken, and I've lost people just like they've lost people, and I'm going to this battle. They got no reason to stay back there. So you can see this kind of building, and you can see the anger, but it's not with David. And when they come back, the evil people, look at how God describes them. People with this kind of attitude are evil. People with this kind of thought pattern and attitude are troublemakers. And their jealousy and envy that these guys may get what I've earned, and they haven't earned it at all. These guys may get what I deserve because I went to the battle, and they don't deserve it at all. And David says to them, how can you think such things? Nobody is going to be in agreement with you, because everything we have was given to us by God. We didn't get any of it by ourselves. And how angry would God be with us if we use the things he gave us in this way? And so David set a proclamation. He wrote an executive order, even though he was not yet king. And whenever the writer of 1 Samuel wrote this down, he said that executive order is still in place to this day. And I would imagine it would have been long after David had died. And that executive order was this: the group of people that stays with the baggage will have an equal share of the plunder, just like those that went into the battle. Not less, not more, but they will have an equal share of the plunder with those that went into the battle because they stayed and watched the baggage. And that was the law with the Israelite army, at least up until the time that this was written. And I don't know how long after that. But that's the way that David did this, and David handled it. And so he gets to Ziklag, and what he does, he sends gifts to all of the people that had helped him. Oh, y'all can't see that one back there. Hebron right here is where David is going to be ruling. That's one of the cities. All these cities up in here. And Arad is one of them. Ben Sheba is one of them. All the cities around this area right here, he sent gifts to the elders. This is the southern part of the tribe of Judah. And these are the same guys that are going to come and make David king as soon as they find out that Saul is dead. And he sends gifts to them, not only to them, but to every area or to every city that helped him and his men while they were running from Saul. And he sends gifts of all these different things. And verse 27 through verse 31 is the place where all those cities are named. And if you want to look them up and try to find them on the map, you're welcome. You're welcome to do that. Now we go to the big battle. Doesn't take up very much time, but it's in chapter 31. Let me trace for you where we are. All the Philistine army came up out of these cities, and they met at Aphek. They come and make their way to Jezreel, and the Israelite army is at Jezreel, but they're going to retreat when the Philistines show up to this mountain, Mount Gilboa. And that's where Saul and his three sons are killed. And we'll come back to that in just a minute. We're going to say a little bit more about these two places. But this is where the area is where they're fighting. David is back down here at Ziklag. He's way back down here. And so it takes a while for the message to come to him that Saul is dead. Matter of fact, we don't read about him hearing about Saul's death until we turn and read in 2 Samuel. And that's part of what we'll review. So the Philistines came and fought against Israel, and the Israelites fled. And they fled to Mount Gilboa, and there many of them fell dead. The Philistines were in hot pursuit of Saul. The archers were shooting at him, and the archers mortally wounded him. And when he knew that he was mortally wounded, he said to his sword bearer, "Kill me. Don't let these uncircumcised people get hold of me, because they will abuse me." And he didn't want to go through the torture that would come if they got a hold of him. And the armor bearer was terrified of doing that. And so he refused to do it, and so Saul took his own sword, and he fell on it. And when the armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, it's important to read this the way that it's written, then the armor bearer also fell on his sword, and he died with Saul. And so Saul and his three sons and his armor bearer and all his men died together that same day. When the Israelites along the valley and those that were on the other side of the Jordan heard that the Israelite army was fleeing from the Philistines, they all packed up and left. They left the cities and they fled, and the Philistines came and occupied the cities that those people had left from, giving them instant supplies and instant food. So they occupied those cities. The next day, the Philistines came to strip the dead, take the plunder. They found Saul, and they found his three sons on Mount Gilboa. They cut off his head, and they stripped off his armor, and they sent messengers throughout the land of the Philistines to proclaim the news in the temple of their idols and among their people. They took his head back to the temple of their Ashtoreths, or back to the temple of their god Dagon. You remember, that's where they took the ark, and Dagon fell before the ark. And they take Saul's head and they bring it back to the temple of their god Dagon. They take his body and the body of his three sons, and they go to this city right here, Bethshan, and they nail his body to the wall. That city of Bethshan is a crossroads city. It's a crossroads from those that are coming out of the valley of Jezreel and those that are going down the Jordan River Valley. So it'd be in sight of everybody up north who wants to go toward the south or flee over, coming out of here to go over across the Jordan. And that's where they nailed his body to the wall of that particular city. The Bible then tells us that the men of Jabesh-Gilead, and this is Jabesh-Gilead, heard about what they had done, and some of the brave men went to this city, took the bodies down from the wall, brought them back to Jabesh-Gilead, and burned the bodies. And then took the bones and buried the bones. Later on, in 2 Samuel, David is going to dig those bones up and move them. But that's what they did with the bones of Saul and with his sons. Do you think they were trying to honor Saul? To give proof that he was dead? To give proof to all of their people that he was dead? You think the people of Jabesh-Gilead were trying to honor Saul? Yes, they were. This is Sunday night, Lord willing, we're going to talk about cremation. So we're not going into a lot of detail about it right now, but I'm going to talk about it Sunday night, Lord willing. And this is one of the verses. And so here, burning the body is not a dishonorable thing. It's an honorable thing. And we'll talk a little more about that then. War is a brutal thing. And this was a brutal thing. And it would not have been a whole lot of different if it had been Israelites on the other side. And you can see that as we go through. Okay. If you want to turn over, we're just going to kind of look at this very briefly. There's a guy who escapes from the Israelite army. He happens to be an Amalekite. And he makes his way with torn clothes and in a ragged mess all the way down to Ziklag, where David is, and tells David that he has come from the battle that Saul and his army are having with the Philistines. And David asks him, how is that going? And he says, Saul and all three of his sons are dead. And David and his men begin to mourn because Saul is dead. And then David asked the man, this Amalekite, how did he die? And the Amalekite says to him, I came across him and he was leaning on his sword. And the Philistine chariots were in hot pursuit of him. The Philistine chariots and their drivers were in hot pursuit of him. And Saul was saying to me, take my life because I don't want those Philistines to capture me. So I took his sword and I killed him. And I have brought to you his crown and the bracelet that he wore on his arm. And David looked at that man and said, why is it you were not afraid to take the life of the Lord's anointed. Your own words have judged you, because you have said that you killed the Lord's anointed. And now you're going to die, because you've killed the Lord's anointed. And he commanded his men to kill him, and they did. Was he lying, or was he telling the truth? That's a question. And I don't know that we exactly know the answer to it, except I think the writer tells us in 1 Samuel Saul was dead. I think the writer in 1 Samuel, who wrote after all the events, is writing back, giving us the truthful account of what happened. And the armor bearer, seeing that Saul was dead, fell on his sword also, and he died with Saul. And in the man's story, can you see a little bit of a hint that might indicate, yeah, his facts aren't right and he's lying? Can you see anything? Hello? Okay, this Amalekite in 2 Samuel chapter 1 says who's in hot pursuit? The chariots and their drivers. Who was it that was in hot pursuit of Paul, of Saul? The archers. There's a little difference there. Is that difference significant? I don't know. But there's a little bit of difference there. And the chariot drivers, now the chariot drivers, the chariots and the chariot drivers could have had archers with them. And they could have been like a cavalry. It could have been, yeah, he's telling the truth, and he must have seen something. But he has the crown, and he has the band that was on his shoulder. And you would think he got those before the Philistines got there. And has taken them to David. But I think he thought David would be pleased with the message and would give him a reward for killing Saul. But he had no idea of the heart of David. He had no idea, evidently, how many times David had opportunity to kill Saul and refused to do it because he honored him as the Lord's anointed. And now he is not at all happy with this man that does this. David is anointed king of Judah by the people of Judah. And one of Saul's sons is anointed. Wait, is that right? Where's his name? I want to say Ish-bosheth, but it is Ish-bosheth. Son of Saul. Okay, he was 40 years old. And he was named by the guy who was in charge of Saul's army, a man by the name of Abner. And he was the one who was anointed king over all of Israel. He ruled 2 years. David ruled Judah for 5.5 years. So you had a divided kingdom for this period of time, and it took a while for things to kind of come into place in order for the kingdom to come together as a united kingdom. So if you think about it, after Solomon's death and the kingdom divided, it was not the first time it divided. Saul had a united kingdom. At his death, it divided between the north and the south. And it's going to be that way for a few years. And then David, with the help of others, is going to reunite it. And after it's reunited, he's going to rule for another 33 years, which makes the total time he rules 40 years. Part of that is over just Judah, and then the rest of the time is going to be over the kingdom that's united under him. Now, interesting thing that happened along this line is that Abner was fleeing the armies. Well, Abner and the guy who was in charge of David's army decided to get together and have a little contest. And in that little contest, they decided that what they would do was select a certain number of men from each of their armies and let them fight it out. And that was going to be some from Joab and some from Abner. Joab was David's head of the army, and Abner had been Saul's. Well, they chose 10, and all 10 of them grabbed each other by the neck and stabbed each other in the stomach, and they all died. Well, then that started everybody fighting. And the result of the fight was that Joab and his army from David killed more of the people of Israel. And so Abner fled for his life. When he did, Joab had a brother that was fast. And he took off after Abner. And Abner was running and was keeping ahead of him. And he saw who it was and called back and said, "Is that you?" And the man said, "Yes." He said, "Well, then stop chasing me." And he says, "No, I'm coming to get you." And so Abner stopped and rammed the rear end of his spear into the guy that was chasing him, and it went all the way through. When that happened, Joab made up his mind he was going to get Abner. And later on, he does, but not for a while. Abner helps Ishbosheth, the son of Saul. Are y'all getting confused? Abner is over the Israelite army, northern part. And Ishbosheth is the guy that's been named king over Israel. And Abner serves him. He is his leader. Well, there's a beautiful lady that is there, and Ishbosheth gets evidently jealous of Abner and accuses him of making inappropriate advances toward the girl. And Abner loses it. And he says, "That's it. I will help make David king over all Israel, and you will no longer rule." And Ishbosheth becomes afraid. And when he becomes afraid, he's afraid of Abner, scared to death of him. And so he doesn't, he's not going to last much longer. But what happens, two guys who lead a raiding party for Ishbosheth, the northern leader, come to his palace to report to him. And when they get there, they find out that he's asleep taking his nap because it's the heat of the day. And they go into where he's asleep and they kill him. And then they take off to David. And they come to David and say, "We are making it possible for you to become the king over Israel as well as Judah." "What'd you do?" "We went in while Ishbosheth was asleep in his house and we killed him." And David says, "You know, I had another guy come see me who thought I would be happy about an individual he had killed. And I killed him. And now you come telling me you have killed the king of Israel, Ishbosheth. And what is more, you are telling me that you are such brave men that you go into this man's house and you kill him while he's asleep in his own bed. And you think you deserve to live? I am going to kill you so that the world will be rid of you." And he orders his men, and they kill them. And that starts the process of Abner making an agreement with David to help him to become king over Israel. And piece by piece, they began to influence all the ones that are there to come and follow David. But Joab, the leader of David's army, finds out Abner came to see David. And when he finds out Abner came to see David, he gets mad at David and he goes out and sends a messenger to call Abner back. And when Abner comes back, puts his arm around him and stabs him in the stomach and kills him. And David becomes furious. And he has a funeral. And he mourns greatly for Abner in the presence of all Israel. And says that he was killed by wicked men. And he never does have complete trust and faithfulness in Joab again. And when Joab is eventually killed, David will say something to the effect of, he's paid back for what he did to a good man by the name of Abner. And at that time, David then becomes king over all of Israel. And we have the United Kingdom and David's great kingdom. All that purple up there on that map is the area that seemed to be under Saul's control. Part over on the other side of the Jordan River, some of it's questionable, but David is going to spread out a little bit and going to get those Philistines out of the territory, and he's going to have a kingdom, and then Solomon is really going to expand it. And then it's going to divide and it's going to start shrinking because of their unfaithfulness to God. Any questions, comments? Okay, get out your paper, pencil, use a card on the back. I'm kidding. Thank y'all. Enjoyed the class. You've got about 9 minutes, so enjoy visiting with each other.